The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you. In which our heroes draw a card.
Welcome, listener, to the drawing for the 34th episode of The Big Red Couch. I will reach into the Tubbo mystery and find out what our topic will be. We have a contribution from the internet's nascent intelligence, Spambot Angelique. I'm still here, Treasure Planet.
Awesome! I love the Spambots.
They work very hard.
They're so much more creative than us.
So much more artistic integrity. Yes, I think that's what we're looking
Indeed,
for.
Indeed, there's a purity to what they're doing. Unlike the debased and commercial world of RPG podcasting.
Indeed. Actually, I wasn't absolutely sure I was reading it right, because it could be I'm still where Treasure Planet.
No, I think it's I'm still here. Sorry, that's my handwriting.
That's okay. But yeah, we could, the whole lycanthropy angle suddenly springs open.
Ooh,
as well. So
that's true, yeah. I shouldn't be shutting that door, should I?
Indeed. Well, something to look forward to there.
Absolutely.
All right.
See you soon.
Bye.
Some days later.
Hello, listener, and welcome to the Big Red Couch. Today on the microphone we have
Tonya,
Kev,
Ben,
and Craig. This is episode 34 of the Big Red Couch, and our topic is I'm Still Here, Treasure Planet, which came to us quite generously from Spambot Angelique, apparently sometime in 2008.
Yeah, that was the content of the spam.
Oh, wow.
I was in a weird mood. The Spambot Angelique, date, time, so I plug the date and time given into a search engine, and there was some very weird stuff came up, including I'm still here, Treasure Planet.
I see.
I like that we're monetizing spam bots.
Hmm.
Well, as much as we're monetizing anything, we're contentifying spam bots, which is
not a word, but we'll
yes,
accept it for now.
I've got a merchandising contract. You don't have. Oh. Awkward. Yeah.
Great. You've just given me a flashback to the Street Fighter movie.
What?
Didn't believe that was possible.
There's a line at the end where they're fleeing the exploding base and someone says, "Screw it, we're not getting paid enough for this." And Zangief turns around and goes, "You get paid?"
Was that the Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Yes.
Mm. Kylie Minogue.
Other, I wondered whether Kylie Minogue was in it.
I read an epic article about that movie and how, for numerous reasons, it should not have happened or been half as good as it almost is.
Wow. That's faint praise you're damning that with.
Indeed. I personally enjoy it, but and it has subjected the internet to the various Raul Julia lines of course! And
indeed.
For me, it was Tuesday.
Mm.
So that's important.
That is true. For me, it was Tuesday alone. It's worth the price of admission, as it were.
I'm still feeling irrational pride that I'm getting my name right at the start of shows.
As are we all.
Yeah, we're proud for you too.
Yeah.
I appreciate that, guys. Thank you.
Nice one, Dr. Kev.
Yes, that was because Kev winces every time we mention that he's a Dr. Kev now.
Yes, which is why it keeps happening.
Yes!
It's aversion therapy. We're making him avoid us.
So we have ideas.
So we have ideas. How do we want to do this? Do we want to do the John Tent? Is it John Tent?
Yep, we have John Tent for this episode. Shall I start there?
Yes. May as well give John the opportunity to hull our ideas for a change.
That is a good plan. Okay. The players are the crew of the military/law enforcement starship assigned to investigate why an entire uninhabited Earth-like planet appears to be travelling around and among fringe star systems of its own accord and occasionally shooting at things. The only clue so far is that after it destroyed a small trading post in an asteroid field and left, a transmission was sent from the vicinity of the wreckage of a wild-eyed, disheveled-looking man in a ship cockpit defiantly yelling, "I'm still here, Treasure Planet," after which the rogue planet abruptly returned to the scene, lingered for several hours, and then sped off in a different direction. The prime worry, aside from the general low-level destruction and mayhem it's currently causing, is that this thing is really a fully Earth-sized planet, with all the mass and gravity that implies. When it swings through a star system, it has the potential to disrupt orbits. If it's decided to visit the inner system somewhere where one of the local worlds has a biosphere, which is necessarily rather dependent on staying in a stable habitable zone orbit, that would be bad. What the players eventually discover is that the strange man was a sort of freelance archaeologist/prospector/adventurer investigated the remnants of lost civilizations and old bases and whatnot for valuable technology and shiny baubles. About 6 months ago, he visited a planet that was positively teeming with neat abandoned stuff from some lost civilization and took what items he could fit in his ship's hold. What he didn't know at the time was that this civilization had, for some reason, wired its planet with a sentient computer network and giant engines. His visit woke the planet up, and it's been chasing him ever since because it wants its stuff back. He's refusing and continuing to flee out of a mix of factors including defiance, bloody-mindedness, spite, the fact that the planet just shoots at him whenever it gets near him, and having gone a bit mad from being constantly chased by an entire angry planet for 6 straight months.
That's pretty neat.
Instead, he's just constantly trying to sell what he's taken to unsuspecting dupes so the planet leaves him alone. Unfortunately, the planet doesn't actually have some special way of tracking the stuff he took, so it only has as much to go on as an ordinary human investigator might be able to discover, and is thus just chasing him down anyway. The goal of the players is to first investigate the situation enough to track down the guy who sent the transmission and learn the above backstory, and then try and find a way to resolve things and get the planet to stop its rampage.
Cool. Okay, so that could be very short. You could do it as a one-shot if you catch it at the point at which this guy is trying for the first time to sell something to your players,
mm-hmm.
and kind of spin it out from there. No, we don't want to be the mortal enemies of an entire planet.
Yep, you could do a longer campaign, extending the premise to all sorts of weird and exciting things so that you know what's going on just in time for some nefarious forces to kidnap this idiot and plant him somewhere because they want a planet to roam through somewhere and cause havoc.
Yeah, or you've got the implied campaign of tracking that he's sold so that you can put it the fuck back.
You could go the full Invader Zim flying Mars around like a lunatic deal and chase it down with your own planet and attempt to remedy the situation the hard way.
That is true. In order to hunt down a sentient, highly mobile Earth-like planet, logically what you need to do is fit a bunch of engines to something like a Jupiter and just run the fucker off the road.
Not try and catch
it. Mad Max has taught me anything, and I think it's doubtful that it has, that's the lesson I'm getting from this.
And now I have Jonathan Coulton's You're My Moon in my brain. Thank you.
That would be a very interesting story. If you're an episodic space game and you wanted to throw This Is the Crazy episode in, that would definitely work. It's like, follow that planet.
Is anybody else imagining somebody looking at sort of a sequence of people looking at astronomical charts and trying to track this planet while Yakety Sax plays softly in the background?
That would work. I mean, it could fit into all sorts of things. It could be the Point of Comparison Crazy episode. It could just be a universe where that kind of weird shit is just happening.
Yeah.
With this being a more extreme example, but it's a thing.
It would work fantastically, just thinking about it, for a slightly pulpy E.E. Doc Smith Lensman type game.
Mm.
Big space opera.
Big space opera, because I think at one point they did fit their inertialess drives to a planet and use it as a weapon.
It could be a straight-up horror scenario in something, a Dark Heresy, Warhammer 40k universe. The idea that the universe is full of terrible, disgusting things that want to eat your face, but this week you might just get clever girl to buy an entire planet.
Mm. Yeah, that's getting snuck up on by an intelligent planet would be, how did I not see that coming? Oh, wait.
You could do it as either heist movie or heist prevention movie in terms of that if it's capable of figuring out that this guy stole stuff from it because he didn't hide his tracks, rather than because it can track what he took from it, then other people getting onto the surface to steal stuff while it's distracted, it might not notice.
Okay. So a little bit of space-going leverage thing.
Yeah. Or a circumstance where the party find that they've gathered all the stuff that this guy sold, and the planet is still convinced this thing's missing.
Yeah.
And then you go through the records and you realize that a team of very competent, aggravatingly timed jerks
have done precisely that.
Yeah.
I'm kind of imagining returning to the planet's surface with the stuff, and then finding that, yes, there was this civilization that's died out, but it doesn't mean there's nobody living there. Just means they don't live in the cities anymore. Imagining somebody coming to talk to the primitive tribesmen living in, I don't know, the equivalent of Central Park or possibly a slightly larger park overlooking the city, and having them just being very, very relaxed about it. Sort of, yeah, we noticed that the skies were changing, the sun seemed to be moving around. Any idea what that's about?
That's pretty mellow.
Yeah, well, people with absolutely no interest in the cities
whatsoever.
At all. They don't care that anything was taken.
Mm.
I'm not entirely sure how you'd link them into the plot, other than maybe they're the only ones the planet will actually listen to.
Yeah, that's something I was definitely considering, the idea that you might be able to recover the goods, return to the planet, but you kind of have to say, look, we're putting it back, and make sure that it goes back in the right place in a convincing enough manner that the planet actually settles down.
Mm. It's either that, or the planet is trying to collect all this stuff so that its people will come back and able to tell that they're still there, they're just not in the cities anymore.
Mm.
Yeah.
No longer behaving.
At which point it's a matter of persuading a couple of villages, a couple of different villages, to send people in once a week just to say, hi!
Or alternatively, hook up wireless cameras so that the planet can tell it's not alone.
That would be sad.
Aww.
Aww.
All of the feels.
Lonely planet hardcore.
Neat. Cool. Thanks again, John.
That was John Tint.
All right.
We need to get a musical sting for John Tint.
I'm thinking kind of a John Tint.
I was just thinking something along those lines. Yeah.
And now I have something that I can mix.
Oh, good.
Hopefully,
if you could layer it to try to make it sound a little bit less reedy and warbly, that would be nice.
Yeah, we can do that.
Maybe some sparkles. I'm not entirely sure how that works in audio, but that's your department.
I think it's those teeny tiny tubular bell things.
Ooh. A glissando effect.
Hmm. Anyway.
All right. So who's... I
go.
Or you could go. You should go next.
Yeah. I actually have two separate ideas, but they're very short, so...
I'll allow.
We'll see what happens there. The first one is a... What's the phrase I'm looking for here? Kind of Robinson Crusoe, Ben Gunn type thing, where you have a guy who has been marooned on, I don't know, an asteroid or something. Doesn't really matter. But he's kind of a Fruit Loop by this point. But he is telling these stories of a big score to be had from this treasure planet. So the game would be you, as his rescuers, trying to figure out what is this guy's fevered imaginings and what is actual clues to finding the treasure planet.
Okay.
And that's basically all I had for that one.
It is effectively a treasure hunt where the treasure map is unreliable and needs a shower.
Yes, and occasionally we'll start throwing food around just because.
Awesome. Also, is anybody else imagining an asteroid with one palm tree on it? Or was it just
me? A little bit. That was actually a little bit sparked by your whole space piracy idea.
Which was in turn sparked by the Gutter Skypes.
Which was in turn sparked by the Gutter Skypes, because awesome ideas come from there.
Pretty much.
So there's that one.
I kind of like the... Yeah, I like the unreliable and possibly completely mad treasure map approach.
Yeah.
We could do it either as a person or as an AI who's also gone nuts.
Okay, so you've scrumped some AI parts to fix your computer, and it turns out that your very own ship has gone very slightly balmy, but has some information on some stuff that sounds interesting, intriguing, like you might want to go there.
I'm not sure whether I would try to do either version, but particularly the AI one. I mean, you could do it as something where you figure out all of the clues ahead of time as GM, and you drop them in just weird places and let the players figure it out, the sort of the hardcore investigation game, or whether I'd just go for a slightly more comic relief version, or a rather vastly more comic relief version, where you're being sent on things that seem like wild goose chases. And some of them are, and some of them aren't.
Okay.
And the idea that occurred to me for it was that it might be interesting to have a circumstance where players recover some kind of artifact or some kind of machinery and they're digging into it and it is giving them data.
Mm-hmm.
And the initial assumption is, hey, we have found alien tech. This is great. We need to know more about it. And then figuring out partway through, okay, no, this isn't an alien computer. This is just a computer that's really intelligent and also mad.
Interesting. Okay.
And figuring out the circumstances behind that. and realizing that rather than exploring potentially the ruins of a civilization, you are in fact duplicating the footsteps, weirdly communicated as they are, of some nasty people who hid some important things and who now may be onto you.
That would be interesting and indeed bad.
Mm.
I think I like the idea of doing sort of a mid-ground between things that Craig was suggesting, so that you have a handful of clues that may or may not mean anything figured out ahead of time, but mostly what you're doing is listening in on the players. Wouldn't it be awkward if, and picking the most awkward from whatever ever comes up when you randomly do a roll. So
that was your idea number one, which is
number one. Okay, so number two, do other people want to go first?
No, you should go.
Was actually far more of a board game, I think. I'm not sure. The treasure planet is a physical place. It has bunches of treasure all over the place. It also has a bunch of traps. So the players are attempting to get to either as much treasure as they can or to the biggest treasures while avoiding being womped, stomped, and chomped on. I'm thinking of this as maybe a zombie cinema reskin. Something along those lines. Or possibly a Doom Clock type game.
Okay.
Last Man Standing.
That does sound somewhat competitive.
Mm.
Doesn't necessarily have to be, depending on how you reskin it. Because it could be a thing where, if we're going with the SF context that a lot of people are going for, then the zombie cinema thing might be the more time you spend in its place, the more it wakes up.
Ooh.
And so the more likelihood that you're going to actively be stomped and jumped on, paying attention, rather than just autonomous floating around.
Okay.
So can the team work together and overcome their personal differences? I don't know.
Before the planet wakes up and says, oh, no, you don't.
Yeah.
Skivich. And that's what I got.
That is a cool idea. I think it could be done as an RPG thing in terms of dungeon crawl. If we found something that was good at doing interesting dungeon crawls.
D&D first ed!
Back in the box.
D&D second ed!
This is going to take a while.
How long is it going to take us to get to Pathfinder?
1.5 more editions?
Or 40 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
I own a D&D second edition. I'm not ashamed. Much. But that's changing the more you look at me like that.
It's a weird thing to be ashamed of.
It was kind of an awesome mission.
Yeah.
To be fair, that's precisely what D&D has always modelled.
Mm.
Because the idea is that you start off at X level and the modules or adventures that have been set before you are supposed to be equivalent to that level. But as you get powerful, things get complicated with variables. So that actually models that pretty closely.
It really does. So, yeah, it would be using Pathfinder to model a slightly spacey-themed NetHack.
Brain.
Let's get all those references in the same idiom, why don't we?
Brain, yeah. Explode! I was wondering with a dungeon world.
Oh, yeah.
The apocalypse world.
I think it would be. It would definitely be working towards that direction. Because that's one of the ones I haven't read. I understand it's to replicate the experience of going through a dungeon rather than...
Without requiring a rule book that's an inch thick.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, some people, the mechanical mastery of the rules in some of those sets of games really appeal. This is more to, as far as I understand, is more to replicate the experience of the highs and lows and the twists and sort of thing.
Caving with treasure.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So that would match that sort of experience. There are a lot of science fiction games that replicate the same sort of thing as directly because they have to try and cleave slightly more toward realism and circumstances where if you run headlong at the big bad guy,
you're going to get squished.
Yeah, you don't have... I'm sure there are exceptions, but normally they assume that you don't have a huge meaty stack of hit points to hide behind while you battle.
Okay. So, well, there is that, but then you also have games like, say, Paranoid, which are, in their core, a dungeon bash. We're getting around...
A trap-filled environment.
A trap-filled environment and attempting to stay alive and hit the magic button.
Yes, okay. Yeah, that works.
I could go next? Or
go for it.
Yep. All right. I went in a slightly different direction with I'm Still Here, Treasure Planet. and indeed ended up with quasi-Christian mythology.
Okay.
Specifically, Prester John.
Ah, okay. The world's first Nigerian...
email scam.
Email scam.
Of a sort, yes. Yeah. You know, the legends of this Christian kingdom, surrounded by, well, certainly during the time of the Crusaders, surrounded by Muslim kingdom, and possessing vast wealth. And the location of the kingdom moved, but effectively every time geographical knowledge kind of caught up.
It's the edge of our known world.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
From my tiny bits of research, it sort of started off probably in India and then moved steadily east.
Okay.
Effectively. Then again, there's also the North African option.
Mm.
But in any case, I decided to go with I'm Still Here, Treasure Planet, as we have a spacefaring society. I honestly couldn't decide whether it was hardcore technological spacefaring society or whether to go with the slightly ridiculous here is a ship being which has been deliberately beached on an asteroid so you can scrape away the space barnacles and the vacuum weed from the keel in order to get better speed out of it. And to a great extent, it doesn't really matter. But you've got out there somewhere, everybody knows about this, is this planet, fantastic place, ruled over by wise and kindly and above all, generous rulers. But it's very far away and it's very hard to find, and there are a lot of enemies in between. But they're fighting the good fight, as it were. And I think the game would be about people. I can see sort of two different ways of pitching it. You either have it as a crew of adventurers going off to find this treasure planet and make themselves unimaginably rich. Or if you take a slightly darker view of things, that you've got, oh, it's a dangerous world out there, and frankly, where you are isn't that much better. I'm not talking sort of full-on Imperium of Man Warhammer 40K, but if you've got a very locked-down society, things aren't terrible for everybody, but they're not that great for the people at the bottom. But there are ways of travelling around if you're prepared to do the equivalent of hoboing on trains and the like. And so you've got a group of very much down on their luck people attempting to make their way to this space version of Prester John's kingdom. They're not even sure where it is. They're following rumour and legend to
Big Rock Candy Mountain.
Yeah, trying to get themselves to somewhere that's better than this, because while there are places that are worse, anything's better than here.
Okay, so Treasure Planet / Utopia /
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe I also may be riffing on the plot of, I think it's Interstellar 555.
What's that?
Or was it 999? It's an anime about a space-going train. Somebody who's attempting to make his life better, or at least different. Very much one of those it's the journey, not the destination stories. I need to track down a copy at some point, and indeed remember the name.
I think Interstellar 555 was the Daft Punk music video that was an album long, or...?
Yeah, but it was inspired by the anime.
Okay, well, it does make some degree of sense.
Yeah. So that's what I came up with for I'm Still Here, Treasure Planet.
Neat.
Because, you know, if the place actually exists, and it is actually this wonderful, welcoming place, then I kind of like the idea that there are these messages that keep cropping up, especially if you're going with the darkened down version of the world. There are these messages that just keep cropping up, despite the best efforts of the authorities.
I'm still here, signed Treasure Planet.
Treasure Planet. Yeah. They're not going to be on billboards, or if they are, they're going to be spray-painted on the back.
Right. Okay, so I'm actually seeing kind of space for a Magnificent Voyage-type story. And you could do it hoboing on steamers, or effectively...
Freighters and mail ships
and stuff. Or you could do it as in a bunch of people getting together to say, okay, there's this place, what they need is connection to the greater universe, what we need is somewhere that isn't here, let's make this bet, scrape together enough to buy a small ship and attempt to make that connection. At that point, you kind of got a lost in space thing going on of, we're going to planets that aren't really connected to the universe we know, let's find out about them. Monster of the Week / Disaster of the Week / Tea break chapter.
Dr. Zachary Smith betrays us.
Yet again. We don't shove him into a barrel and throw him out the airlock for some reason.
Although these are role players, that's going to happen eventually if you have the same thing happening to them.
By eventually, we mean by the second session.
Yes.
If you went for a very collaborative approach, you might be interesting to try something where, this is understood from the offset, but the place is a huge Nigerian prince. Style scam, but uh-huh. The players inadvertently found it during their travels.
Found as in create. Rather than
they locate. They chase this legend and do things, meet people, attain little steps and goals as they go. And at some point, they actually realise they have
become the Nigerian prince in question.
They actually stumble into what they were looking for. By building themselves.
I was wondering that with the monster/disaster/tea break of the week thing, that if along the way, as they travel around, they've kind of got this rooster tail of, or comet's tail, I guess would be more accurate, of places they've been to
that are a
and
bit better now.
Helped and made better, and these places that they've been to are now talking to each other.
Yeah.
And that, the fabled treasure planet turns out not to be a place, but this huge, long, either a great big long run or a web of all of the places that these guys have visited and tied together.
Spelling out, the power was within you all along. Across the night sky.
Yep. Okay, if that happens, I feel the players are allowed to kick the GM right in the junk.
Well, the GM would have to be monstrously manipulative to pull that off.
That never happens. True.
Oh, no, wait, the other thing. Which would be the other reason the junk kicking would transpire. Yes. So if it's collaborative, if that's actually what the notion is, that they're building that sort of story together, that would be pretty cool.
Okay. So a little more dough-like than maybe. A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit more. Yeah. So, but the idea is that they're working towards this goal, this thematic goal, as well as the story just rolling as it should.
That's neat.
Shall I...
You spoke up.
Posit my, well, bring it out, folks.
Yep.
So, the I'm Still Here Treasure Planet story seed was fairly odd, but it made me think of a bulletin board game I tried to run in 1994 or 1995.
Okay.
I don't think it ever took off. I think it managed to start introducing characters in posts and did get very much, I'm not sure why. But at the time, I was still very excited about the Alien/Aliens universe, and I was positing an idea that the Colonial Marines, because people were keen on the Colonial Marines, were being sent to a planet to investigate some sort of possible xenomorph infestation. The Treasure Planet thing comes on is that the planet is a mining colony, but it is a mining colony by virtue of they have had an unstable, mineral-rich satellite around a relatively boring rocky wall, and instead of dicking around in orbit around this dangerous, unstable satellite, they thought it would be much simpler to blow the crap out of it and pick bits off the surface of the planet when they land.
Right, so the habitats for the people who are doing the mining are underground a fair ways.
Yep.
Because of the rain of precious meteorites.
Yes.
Dude, what happened to your trailer? Got hit by a cubic kilometre of gold. Son of a bitch!
Yeah. So presumably the stuff rains down slightly more heavy concentration tropics.
Uh-huh.
And the mining takes place in gigantic, very heavily armoured bulldozers.
That makes sense.
Piloted by people with a certain fatalistic outlook on the world. So it's what the I'm Still Here part. This defiant, slightly angry, probably frequently drunk, mining world. And the idea of having the players introduced to the setting, either as somebody investigating a crime or the folks on the company for the thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it more sprung a sort of set ingestion.
Oh, that's pretty cool. You could equally be, as players, a mining group, sort of people who are running on these giant bulldozers and occasionally getting drunk, standing in the scoop and shaking their hands at the sky, shaking their fists at the sky.
Which is probably shaking its fist right back. But yeah.
I was originally imagining just a scene of somebody in probably sort of, I'm imagining cold weather gear rather than full space suit, but somebody who's climbed out of the crawler in order to go and pee on a rock or something, do their business, zipping up, turn around, just this enormous ball of, I don't know, platinum or something, just crushes the, just blows a hole right through the crawler, which sort of quietly does this, crash.
Shit. That's actually a really good one shot. That's actually a really good one shot. You've got, if the crawlers are spaced out a bit, and one of them gets damaged to the point where it's basically non-functional, but the driver's still okay, maybe the your one shot is going to find and rescue that guy before he gets munched.
Yeah. Well, I had a thought for kind of doing it in two parts, where these people from somewhere else turn up and are solving a problem in this ridiculously hardcore environment. So that you've got the whole, the fire miners. Very pretty, the whole, the fire miners, I'm still here, treasure planet, everything else. Except then partway through it's figured out that the satellite that was unstable and filled with really precious things was artificial. And contained something that you could only contain by wrapping it in a planetoid of really dense material, which will have survived re-entry. And re-ended.
And we're back to Alien!
Awesome. Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. The Aliens universe isn't Warhammer 40k because it's much less habited, not because it's nicer. So the idea that there was, that there's something that is still there and has now made landfall, what do you do?
Hey, we found what we think was the core of the asteroid. That's awesome. Yeah, not so much. Looked like something punched its way out from the inside.
Oh.
Yeah.
Maybe it's valuable. Yeah, you get right on that, Skippy. Let us know what you find.
Book it out of here.
Yeah, based on on the one per universe rarity scale, yes, it is valuable in that regard.
Either that or, you can go with something where the Marines turn up and they're solving a problem and just stuff starts getting increasingly weird. And it kind of crosses over into the Dead Space thing where what was in the asteroid isn't necessarily physically formidable. It's just reaching out and starting to take over the miners. It was in a Faraday cage.
Mental takeover sort of thing. There's a Farscape episode on those lines.
Yes.
Some sort of psychogore.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Whereas I was thinking that if you have this thing, rather than having it being something that's alive, you could have it being something that is weird physics breakdown. That you have this thing that the lighter it gets, the more dense materials start popping into existence. So it's, you've heard those stories about things that happen in D&D where somebody opens a flask of Everwater and drops it. This would be a flask of ever money in all.
So something that has a defensive reaction of bringing into existence heavy elements. And while it's just tootling around in space, you know, it's just, you know, making transuranic metals and so forth.
In tiny, sort of, a few atoms
at a time. It's sort of, and its groove has been disrupted, as it were. It is now.
It's gone into overdrive. This is going to be a problem for the universe as we know it in a couple of years.
Because that stuff's coming from somewhere. Who knows?
Or is it? Yeah. We don't know.
Intriguing. So, yeah, there's lots of. Yeah, working out the whys and wherefores of either the backstory or the society of the miners who could be either, you know, extremely rugged individualists like ice truckers or other sorts of people with very crazy jobs, or convicts or just monstrously unlucky folks who live on a really nasty planet. And hey, maybe it wasn't a really nasty planet. Maybe our friends at Wayland Yutani are building better worlds. And this thing has just been had a couple.
They're doing their tour as a miner so that they can go home and have a nice life, assuming they don't get squashed first.
Yes. There's so many opportunities on the fringe. Yes.
Yeah.
It is. I have always liked the Alien universe.
Well, if you wanted to bring in the megacorp dystopianism thing, the planet could have had a colony that was perfectly happy trucking along when it had a weird moon. And then the corporation that owns the planet said, you know what, it's just easier if we're going to blow that up. Get a helmet.
Yes.
Okay, so this would be the, like, the planet and soldier.
I was wondering that, yeah.
Although in that case it was a colony that where the company decided to use the planet as a dump.
Yeah.
and the colony wasn't supposed to be there and they'd crashed. That's just that nobody ever looked.
Mm.
Spoilers.
Very much along those lines, yeah, that you had a colony where there are going to be people who remember when it was safe to go outside.
Mm.
And maybe they've just, the company has not realised that raining money on these people whose lives they've ruined might not have been the best long-term strategy ever.
Sure it is. They're the only people with the ability to export anything, so you've got people being paid in company script for fantastic wealth.
Okay, but they're not very impressed, and they might take steps.
They might.
That's the story right there. Yeah, at that time we took a bunch of slightly smouldering uranium and shoved it right up Wayland Utani's.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could have all sorts of scope for political infighting and things in terms of the Marines are called in because there's no other option. There is wrangling about the fact that, according to Wayland Utani, they control orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got this machine of death that is being escorted, among other machines of death that just are not interstellar capable. And it's right off the outset, kind of, why do you need us? Because they can't land.
He described it as a throat noise.
You know, you could do something a bit like Helix, except not fucking stupid.
No, don't hold back. Tell us what you really think of Helix.
It makes me sad. It would have been so much easier to take the premise and tell a better story without using bullshit as plot spackle.
Have characters who are scientists who actually do some science.
Yeah.
What about Dr. Fu Manchu?
Haven't actually seen him do any science either. We've seen him looking suspicious and shooting people occasionally.
Technically that's science. It's physics.
What we've seen is the assumption that at some point someone did some science, and what we're watching is the fallout as people patently fail to do science.
Sometimes they do science and it doesn't work. Don't forget. Yeah, that's true. Nothing. Okay.
Deconstructions will continue later, but
maybe we should just set up the microphone and have in this episode, Kev rants about the following show.
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah.
It's not as if I lack for material. But
that's true.
And it could become a valuable teaching aid.
Yeah. It actually.
Anyway.
Yeah, I would play the crap out of that game.
Mm. Any of those games. Because we kind of ranged over quite a wide area. And that just leaves Kevin.
Yes. I have sort of an idea with some speculative nudgings in a direction of how you might be able to turn it into a game. Maybe. The whole I'm Still Here Treasure Planet thing brought to mind some kind of epic interstellar romance story.
Okay.
Did not see that coming.
Starcraft moons?
Not quite. I mean, I was thinking basically that the closest analogue that we've had was the whole living planet AI thing from John Tent. Someone who falls mutually in love with this planet they get stuck on, or that a group of people get stuck on and falls in love with one of them. So the planet's alive, it has an identity.
Okay, so this is a more soothing, it's okay, I'm still here, treasure planet.
Yeah. And the turning it into a game thing is where I then ran into problems, because I was thinking that having mechanics framed around that kind of story would be not something I'm overly familiar with. And how would you do that? You know, if this is a romance between basically the planet entity that can, or maybe it manifests something that looks like a person now that's learned how, or maybe it's just can communicate with people, who knows? But if it's between two primary people, is everybody else kind of secondary? And then it occurred to me that what if we riffed on some of the anime shows that basically have a kind of key relationship at the heart of it, all these other characters that are kind of orbiting it. The players are playing the orbiting people, but who have goals in some way about this central relationship that they are trying to help, that they are, you know, I don't know.
The planet's monkey friend. I don't want to call them a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a thing friend, because
the unhominid.
Yes. Kind of a MacGuffin at that point.
Sort of. I mean, I always think that there's a lot of shows that I'm going completely blank on at the moment where everyone is in some way connected to a core tension, a core relationship thing, and they all relate to it in some way. And so
Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya would tend to...
Would be an obvious one, yeah. Cool show. And so having people... Basically, the concept as it stands needs opposition. There needs to be some kind of problem of say, this person... in fact, I've just thought of one. Of ship crash lands on this planet. People are there for a while. The survivors are basically quite young. They get rescued don't make sense as far as the rescuers are concerned, and they're kids, so they're roundly ignored. But one of them in particular, all of them retain this connection with the identity of the planet, even if they're taken away. So okay. The quest is to get back.
So it becomes like Chalky.
Haven't read Chalky.
Oh, okay. Oh, crap. John Wyndham book mm-hmm. in which you have an entity who is a... We never really find out much about what Chalky is, but it creates connections with human beings while they're still quite young. Adults will often think that the child is either just really imaginative until there are things that the kids can seem to be able to do by agreement with this entity.
Something along those lines, but just an idea that it's not just a reassuring thing, it's kind of a promise of I'm still here, treasure planet, or thing of that the goal is to get back to this planet, to basically, and so you've got this crew of probably teenagers who've all gone in different directions since they were rescued, except they're all kind of connected by this core idea that this person deserves to be back with this planet. And so they're trying to hijack a ship or something and go on this voyage to get home when they don't necessarily know where it is to start with, because it can talk to them, but it doesn't have a great breadth of experience or where it is in the interstellar landscape. But I was thinking about it, if we're riffing on the kind of anime thing, I like the idea of some kind of mechanic of people being able to justify being able to contribute in certain ways by introducing flashbacks back to being on the planet of why this other person's relationship is so important to their own motivations.
Oh, nice. Okay. I think you could do something quite interesting by having, for want of a thought, aspect that link your players together and also link you to the planet's unfriend and to the planet itself. Because if these are the people that the planet knows, okay, it has a special relationship with one of them, but it also has relationships with the other.
Yeah.
With the others. And I was thinking that it would be these people's friend, but it occurred to me that's also not necessarily the case. You could have jealousies and...
You could have all sorts of things. You could have planetary guilt on the level of the planet was aware of things but still figuring out how to communicate and just what the hell was going on during the post Starship Crash, Lord of the Flies period, in which some people died, depending on how grim you want to do it, at each other's hands or because of the elements. And then it's kind of a, if only I'd figured this out yesterday.
I'm wondering whether one of the... Either something in an Apocalypse World hack, because Apocalypse World is quite good at doing sort of relationship changes.
It points characters at one another.
Yeah.
Monster Hearts, but with less despicable characters would probably
be. Yeah, I'm kind of thinking something that was a bit nicer. Or, as you say, almost, I know there are anime-related RPGs out there. So I'm wondering whether there is something out there that works for that. Take another look at Panty Explosion Perfect.
They did pick a different title for that at one point. But,
oh, did they?
Yes.
For
that exact reason, yeah.
I have three ideas, one of which is patently terrible, but I can sum up very quickly. Planetary harem comedy.
Yeah.
But the other one that I thought was, with your idea of the crash survivors being rescued, scattered, and rejoining and coming back to the planet, the possibility of having one of the survivors, what a twist, being the planet, or a representative, sort of an anthropomorphization of the planet, so they can have a relation, so people can have a relationship with the planet, except as this individual, rather than the big blue ball that they're talking. So that's another way of approaching...
So instead of the Chalky brain mind meld, got a effectively planetary sock puppet that's in monkey shape.
Yeah, yeah. And so that they can interact with Audrey. I think the idea that they have a mysterious connection works pretty well as well, so they can draw them back together. But the idea that one of the people, possibly one of the people who didn't survive the crash, has come back, which is getting Solaris, I think.
Just a little.
Yeah. Some sort of psychoactive environment that's kind of bringing the lost dead relatives, things like that. But the idea that somebody is suffused with this planetary essence, and that's the other reason they're trying to get back to reunite them.
That is a very anime idea, actually.
Very animist idea as well. So.
Yeah.
that would probably that's kind of intriguing. The third one is that if you want to set this up straight away. And still maybe keep the romance angle, is that humanity has reached the stars. Humanity understands ecosystems and psychospheres as way better than we used to.
Mm-hmm.
And has developed this over coming in contact with them. But with every, so it means that with every colonizing, every scout team, there is a planet whisperer. There is somebody who can communicate.
Or who might be able to, assuming they get on with this particular planet.
So, and the idea that this, that, and that could come back as being this, this, the introducing these people and making overtures towards the planet.
Okay, so at this point it's the player's job to set up neat little, first basically date. Set up dates between your planet comment. Whisperer and, oh my god.
I think I thought of a model of the kind of story I was thinking of in a very different context. We've been watching Kill la Kill recently, and we keep getting these flashbacks to the Karen antagonists. Support network, and we keep learning how they relate to, you know, why they've dedicated themselves to her cause, why they're helping her take over the world.
They don't always make a lot of sense.
They don't always make a lot of sense, but they're very important to them personally. They may have their own agenda as well, but it's also this sincere support of, yes, this person deserves to take over the world. Just in this other case, it's, yes, this person deserves to be back with the planet he said zoning up. So, yeah, I don't know whether it would work better as a game. I thought that initially I thought it really wouldn't. But then I thought, so it would be interesting to try to build something that might.
From your description there and seeing a couple of episodes of Kill la Kill, which made me feel old and tired, the notion that instead of, so if you're building a fate system, instead of having a trouble, you have an attachment to the relationship or the protagonists.
Yeah.
So it works pretty much in the same way, but it's the way that they direct their energies into keeping the plot. And there's something that describes them, but the next layer down, the thing that deflects and changes the way they do things would be their relationship to the great struggle.
Okay. Well, so you would have a trouble that is, that connects you to one, but not both necessarily of the, romantically involved people. And in what describes in what way you are connected.
Yeah. It would be something like, they're certain that these two people need to be together, but they have no idea of personal space. Something like that.
Okay, yep.
And we're back to Heron Comedy.
The other option would be to leave a lot of that blank and fill that in during the game in terms of that these flashbacks are something that someone is coming up with on the fly to lock down part of their motivation, kind of building it up as you go. So it's not just being revealed to everybody, it's that person going, I have remembered, ha-ha! And,
so it's a little bit inspectors on those lines.
Yes, he said, not really inspectors to everyone.
Actually, you could do this as an inspector. You have a camera crew following a team on a new planetary exploration as you're attempting to make this connection between your planet Whisperer and the planet.
I think the resources would be possibly more emotional than the version of it, yeah, but that's workable.
To use the piece to camera thing to do the, and this is why I'm here, this is what's going on now.
It might be more of a Dear Diaries that everyone gets to see through.
Maybe.
Wibbly vision, but yeah.
Wibbly vision?
Wibbly vision.
Wibbly vision. Okay.
I am trademarking that right now.
Fair enough.
I think, despite the fact everybody went to a science fiction context, nobody held anybody else's idea.
No.
Not even close, damn, actually.
We keep thinking that's going to happen. I think it's only happened, sort of happened once, when it was an idea we didn't have much time, I think.
At least there was a Yusanka battleship.
Yeah, well, that's turned up less frequently possible. Though, I'm a little disappointed. Since this is our Rule 34 episode, I was expecting more pervy stuff.
We gave you the harem comedy. What more do you want, you horrible little mutant? Also, I completely forgot about the episode 34. Look, tell you what, send me some links, and I will totally not put them in the show notes.
I did good my bit. I framed an entire game around somebody falling in love with the subject of the card.
And there was probably porn of that.
Probably.
Yes, because there's that bit from The Boys with the asteroid.
Oh, get out of here, you horrible man.
Anyway.
Yeah, and apparently I'm the bad guy for suggesting something that is a bit Rule 34.
Yes, you rose to my bait, as it were.
Oh, yeah. And on that note,
does anyone have any shout-outs?
I don't know if it's still happening by the time that this episode is going to air, but the story on Kickstarter is cool. Check it out. Or, if it's closed by then, weep for having missed it. Either way.
Or go to Storium and check out the product and see if you want to actually purchase it.
Yeah.
I have a shout-out for Sirenscape.com. That's Sirinscape, who do this wonderful thing that gives you a soundtrack behind your game, so that you can have actual battle sounds behind your battle.
Creepy dungeoneering noises?
Creepy dungeoneering noises, and one-shot things so that if your mage casts a spell, you can have twinkly ice sounds, or the sounds of trees catching on fire and falling over in the middle of a storm. All sorts of wonderful stuff. I was hoping to be able to add that in, but I haven't figured out how to have both the microphone and Sirenscape running at the same time.
Second laptop. Suspect. Or you fix it in post.
Right. So there's that.
Sirenscape. It's probably a damn sight better than the bargain basement sound effects that we used to do in games of First Ed AD&D many years ago.
Until that was you saying trudge, trudge, trudge
to get the place. It was not just me. It was me and Chris saying trudge, 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 trudge. And various other things. Yes, bargain basement sound effects until we were asked and then told and then ordered not to.
Sound effects can be tricky. I remember a story told that the party was told, you hear the goblins going glug, glug, glug. And somebody's went, are they drinking something? Or are they just making glug, glug, glug noises to make us think they're drinking something?
Or are they drowning?
Possibly. But it wasn't determined until the horribly strength-enhanced goblins came over the hill that they were figuring it out.
Or are they chanting out a battle cry and a... Or ritual to glug.
True.
Mm.
Glug, glug, glug.
Glug. Glug is like grond, but scotchy.
Or are they drowning in a giant gelatinous cube that's coming for you? And this was the GM's way of warning you. And the players are sitting there kibitzing about what it might mean as a thing comes around the corner and goes...
It's right up there with the hellbirds.
Birds from hell or hellbirds? The stick with a knife on the end.
Hellbird. Flappy! Hellbird! No, Hellbird! Stick! Pointing! Oh, Hellbirds! Ravenloft.
Didn't help that they were flying Hellbirds.
Yeah, flying Hellbirds did not help.
Anyway, with that reminiscence,
yes.
Are we done here? Or?
I think so.
Excellent.
I think we out.
Thank you for joining us, audience.
See you next time.
Bye.
See you.
Next time on the Big Red Couch.
Of course, the video store was the headquarters of the Wild Hunt.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to hoarde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!